तपाईँ एसपिएस नेपालीको साथमा हुनुहुन्छ। अरू रोचक सामग्रीहरूका लागि sbs.com.au/nepali जानुहोस्।
Namaste and hello. You are listening to the SBS Nepali podcast and I am Dinita Rishal, your host today. In this episode, we bring you the second part of our exclusive interview with Tony Burke, the Federal Minister for Home Affairs, Immigration and Citizenship, Cybersecurity and the Arts. In the first part of the conversation with my colleague Abhas Parazuli, Minister Burke spoke about how he and the federal government see the Nepali and Bhutanese communities in Australia. If you missed it, scroll up or down the feed, depending on where you are listening to this podcast, or enter Tony Burke SBS Nepali on your favorite search engine. In this second part of our conversation, we focus on topics of high importance and wide interest, such as social cohesion, citizenship ceremonies, rising visa costs, and the challenges and barriers one has to overcome to bring elderly parents to Australia. The minister also gives some actionable advice for international students facing exploitation and vulnerable community members targeted by cybercrime.
How big is the challenge for you as a Minister for Home Affairs to kind of bring everybody together in day and age of social cohesion, and where everybody is kind of like looking behind their backs what's happening, and with everything going around the world, to kind of bring together everybody and then say, you know, we are all Australians at the end of the day and we all contribute to making this great land of ours even better. What are the challenges that you face on a day-to-day basis?
Look, one of the things that's happening in Australia right now is there are some very loud voices telling people they don't belong. Some very loud voices. And one of the things that I'm always trying to make sure I do as Australia's Minister for Home Affairs is make sure that my voice is used to let people know they do belong, to let people know that a multicultural community, it's like an orchestra. You only get harmony because you've got a whole lot of different instruments. And so my role in making sure that the loudest, angriest voice isn't the only voice people hear is really important. I think one of the greatest moments of unity that I ever experience is when there's a citizenship ceremony. And when I go through, when I'm starting the citizenship ceremony, I go through the list of countries of origin, and people sort of call out for where they are as I go through each country. And when I get to Nepal, and they're pretty much always on the list, there's always a shout of joy from people and waving their hands. The thing that needs to be remembered with citizenship ceremonies is that's when people are paying Australia the biggest compliment anyone can pay us. These are people who've come from all over the world, and they're making an active decision that they want to make a lifelong commitment to Australia. It's a beautiful compliment to pay Australia, and I always make sure every ceremony in the nation now, whether I'm there or not, always includes the final message to people in two words, which is welcome home.
On that note of citizenship, hearing at the moment is the fee hike in resident return visas from $490, which was just before, to $1,475. Yep. And it has been understood by some members of the community as government kind of forcing PR holders to take up Australian citizenship. Is it so?
Look, all the visa fees have gone up. All the visa fees have gone up. Certainly, I do want people to make a lifelong commitment to Australia. I think that's a wonderful thing for them to do. But I would hope that the joy of Australian citizenship is enough on its own. Some people, my political opponents, for example, have said, you know, take away benefits from people if they're permanent residents. And, you know, my view is the benefits are there because you're paying your taxes, you're completely part of the economy. So I think it's a bit silly to be going down the path the opposition's going. And similarly, all the visa fees have gone up. So that is what it is. I do want people to take up citizenship. I do. I think it is, if someone has decided they're going to live here permanently, then I really do want them to make a permanent commitment to the country.
But what we are hearing is the costs are too much, you know, and in some cases prohibitive. But why have the costs gone up by so much this time around?
Well, just remember with the costs as well, anybody who's travelling overseas for an extended period of time has already decided that they've got the cost of an airfare. And, you know, the visa fees are well below that. So, you know, I don't accept the way that it's been characterised. I really don't.
Fair enough. Minister, the Nepali community places a very high value on multi-generational family structures, as you know. Currently, as I understand, the wait times for contributory and non-contributory parent visa streams are measured decades. They're pretty long lines, queues, and the costs are also very prohibitive for some of the visas that tend to take a shorter time. And for many young families, it's kind of like they can't bring their parents over. Like, is there a way for your government to create more human, faster and affordable way or pathways for our parents to visit and live with us, and so that they can provide more cultural continuity and support to us, their children, and our children, new Australians, their grandchildren? Is there anything that the government is planning?
Nothing that we're planning. And can I say the real challenge here is right at the moment you've spoken to me about contributory parent visas, but you could actually pick any visa class, and there's a compassionate reason and decent reason for Australia as to why the visa exists. And within all of that, I have to try to manage a whole program and work out where we put resources into how many people process different visas. So you can run a very compassionate case about contributory parents or parent visas. You can also run a very compassionate case about partner visas where people are in love and living in different countries. You can also run a very decent case about work visas where an employer desperately needs someone to be able to get the work done and the person they need is living overseas. Every visa category exists because there are benefits to Australia and the sort of country we are if we can fill those positions. And I have to deal with that with the limited resources that we have. So I don't go against anything you said in terms of the benefits and the decency, but part of my job is to also work out with resources the pace at which we go.
You're listening to our exclusive interview with Federal Minister Tony Burke. After the break, we will hear more on the hike in visa fees and decades-long queues for parent visas. You are with SBS Nepali Podcast.
And one of the other things that we tend to hear of increasingly hearing is the rejection of visas for parents, elderly parents, even if they are on the tourist stream. Is there anything particularly that's happening behind the scenes?
The thing that's happening with tourist visas is one of the things, and this is not a decision from me, it's just the law. One of the things that the delegates who make these decisions have to weigh up is they have to work out whether or not it's a genuine visit. There has been a long history of people where someone comes claiming it's a genuine visit, and then when they get to Australia, they don't go back and see how long they can stay beyond the original visa. So that's what the delegates are always weighing up. And as people get older, that becomes a more complex test for them. So the law demands that my delegates deal with weighing that up, and they do that as best they can.
How is the department working with other agencies to ensure that temporary visa holders like student visas are being protected from predatory employers? A lot of time the students don't want to speak up because they are afraid that their visas could be revoked. That's what we hear a lot of time, even to speak to media. You know, they say, oh, I don't want to speak to you because if something I speak and then department might notice and we don't want to be seen, heard. What do you want to say to those students who have been in those vulnerable positions and don't want to speak out?
Yeah, if I can say two things, if you're in that vulnerable position. There are two things that happen to students a lot, and I'll talk about one of them you've raised, and there's another one that I'll raise. There are now centres in every capital city that we're funding that deal with migrant exploitation at work. And the Trades and Labour Councils have set them up, and we're funding them in every capital city. And if people just Google, you know, migrant worker exploitation or something like that, it'll come up in the search, and they can be in touch there, and they can get support without having to make an official report or put themselves in the media or anything like that. And so I'd really recommend, no matter what part of the country your listeners are in, if they want to know about their rights, if they think they might be exploited, in every capital city now we have one of these centres. The second sort of exploitation I'd refer to for students to be really careful of is there will be signs around universities or places like that where people get encouraged to hand over their bank account details, and, you know, someone will give them some money for using their bank account. I've just got to warn people, the companies that are doing that are organised crime. And you can find yourself associated with something that you did not want to be associated with. So if anyone is exploiting you at work, get in touch with the worker exploitation centres. If anyone wants access to your bank account, do not give it to them. You can very easily find yourself embroiled with some of the worst organisations in the world. So that's the two pieces of advice I'd give.
Let's jump to arts, one of your other portfolios. Our communities kind of bring rich traditions from classical music, dance, from Himalayas to, you know, unique weaving and linguistic heritage. What are your tips for accessing federal arts funding for a community like ours?
Yeah, go straight to Creative Australia or to the state governments go to the multicultural departments and federally go to Creative Australia. And see what you might have, but also have a think about the things that you can do to preserve your heritage and have it living here is really valuable, and we want people to do that. But also have a think about the next layer. How do you find an opportunity to share your heritage with people who don't know as much about it? Because we want to know people for everything that they bring.
And as a Minister for Cybersecurity, how is the government working to empower single mothers, domestic violence survivors, elders, and other vulnerable members of our communities from cases like the data breaches that we've been hearing and other cyber attacks? What are the tips that you can give them?
Yeah, I'll give people three key pieces of advice. First of all, don't just use a password, use a complex passphrase. Secondly, I want people to know whenever there's an update to your software, do it straight away. Always do the update straight away. Finally, if a link comes to you, don't click on it. Don't click on links that you don't know. There are scams out there all the time. And if you get a cold call from someone claiming to be an official organisation wanting your bank account details or your personal details, hang up and call back on the main line, because there's lots of scams happening out there.
That was Federal Minister Tony Burke, Minister for Home Affairs, Immigration and Citizenship, Cybersecurity and the Arts, speaking with my colleague Abhas Parazuli on a wide range of topics from social cohesion to immigration matters. And we would like to inform you that the opinions expressed in the segment are those of the talents themselves and do not reflect the views or endorsement of SBS. You are with SBS Nepali Podcast. SBS Nepali is part of SBS, the national multilingual, multicultural and indigenous media organisation for all Australians. For more info, visit sbs.com.au/about us and visit sbs.com.au/Nepali for the latest news, current affairs and community updates in Nepali. We broadcast live shows twice every week from our studios in Sydney and Melbourne, which you can listen to on your digital radio by tuning into SBS South Asian Vision every Tuesday and Thursday arvo from 2 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. On Mondays at 2 p.m. we have a full 1 hour show of the latest Nepali hits in Nepali Music Hour. All of these can be listened to again by visiting sbs.com.au/Nepali or by simply downloading our free SBS audio app. We are also on socials as SBS Nepali on Facebook, Insta and X. On YouTube, you can find us by searching SBS South Asian. If you want to reach out, connect or share a tip or feedback, you can also email us. Our email address is nepali.program@sbs.com.au.
लाइक, शेयर र कमेन्ट गर्नुहोस्. एसपीएस नेपालीलाई फेसबुकमा साथ दिनुहोस्.